Hi everybody, it's Ash
and Pip,
and we're very excited to tell you that the new season of our travel podcast is coming at you.
Oh, and over the next couple of episodes, we've got so many cool things, from dispatches to chats to interviews, and also we want you guys to get involved.
So any questions you have, send them our way. The first couple of episodes are going to be exploring the question of why we travel, digging into the motivations, and not just because you want to go for a bit of a holiday and a bit of rest and relaxation. What are the things that make you want to travel? And then we're going to ask about how you travel more interestingly. So
send us your questions. I'm on at Pip Stewart on Instagram and X and Threads.
I'm on at Ash Bardwaj, and I'm on Instagram, and I'm still on Twitter because that's how I think about it, Pip.
Well, someone's got to be, Ash. Someone's got
to
be.
So send us your questions. We really look forward to helping you guys make your travel more fun and more fulfilling.
Welcome back, everyone. We are so excited to have a new season. And I'm very excited, particularly, to be chatting more to Ash. And Ash, since we've been away, you've gone and done a bloody book.
I have gone and done a bloody book. I've also made a baby. I think that was something else that happened since we did a last season. So baby Lara is 16 months old. And yes, I've written a book, and the two are connected. I've started to write a book because I was traveling less than ever. So not only did I have to find something to fill my time, but I was also thinking about what, if I'm going to travel less, how do I make each bit of travel more fulfilling? So I sat down and started to think about all the different types of journey I'd done, the different places I'd been, the different guises that I traveled in, from student and teacher to grieving son, all the way through to soldier and journalist, and then started to understand the motivations. So yeah, that was, the two things are connected, and that's how I've ended up writing a book.
It's quite intense, Ash. You know, I'll just pop out a baby. Well, not you, Dre. But yeah, pop out a baby and a book at the same time. That's, yeah, hats off. It's intense.
You've had babies and written books and done things as well, Pip.
And at times, Ash, I was like, I am delirious. This is going to make no sense. Am I even writing words? But there we are. We've got our books out. They're in the world. And actually, yours is coming out particularly soon, isn't it? And I've got a copy here in front of me, Ash, and I'm not just saying this because you're my friend, but it's genuinely one of those books that if you're into travel, it is so worth a read, because it forced me to question things in a way that I hadn't before. You're annoying like that, Ash. You're like, well, I was just going off to Bali for a jolly, and now I'm really considering the deeper meaning behind my travel. But yeah, you mentioned you started writing this when you had Lyra and your situation was different, but What did you get out of this book? What was it you were trying to achieve when you were writing it?
I think so much of our reasons for travel are based very purely on hearing stories or consuming marketing, and that evoking a need in us that we then just follow through and deliver on travel, or we see something on Instagram. Now, that external motivation or that external aspiration is absolutely fine, because it is connecting somewhere with some need within us. But what my hope was with this book was to understand our internal motivations a bit better. What is it that's driving us to want to travel in the first place? You know, why don't we all just stay at home and just pop to the pub and follow the same routines as always? Why do we leave our hometown? What's going on there? Where does that come from? Why do we find it satisfying to do that? So that's a very basic thing. And then I also realized that despite the fact that all of the messaging we hear about marketing is just holidays focused around hedonism, which is the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. So going somewhere to rest, relax, have lots of nice sleep, eat lots of good food. That's mostly what the marketing shows us. I realised that most of my most fulfilling travels had very different purposes, whether that was stimulating and satisfying curiosity, it was following stories that resonated with me from history or sport or war, actually, and understanding what had happened in those periods of history, or because I went on a journey of healing, psychological healing or physical healing. And I realized that actually not all of my travel was just about sitting on a beach and drinking a beer. Actually, very little of my travel had ever been like that. So two things were happening there. I was thinking, if we understand these internal motivations better, can we therefore plan our time away better? Can we make our trips, holidays, expeditions, journeys of healing more fulfilling because we thought more carefully about the place? And then what does that do once we get to a place? Once we're in a destination, how does it affect the way we behave in that environment? Because I'm sure you find this, Pip, as well. A lot of people will ask you, because your career is in travel, where should I go on my next holiday? What's your favourite place to go on? And you tell me, but my answer is, well, I like this place for this reason, but I found this other place very good for these different reasons. So it's entirely circumstantial, and different places are right for different times and different purposes.
Yeah, and that's what I found really interesting about how you'd structured your book, because you basically divide it up into different motivations. And obviously, I guess some trips, you know, you might be looking for, you know, inspiration or healing or a mixture of the two or whatever it is, and that's okay. But I found it really interesting how you structured it. And what I've been pondering is, someone who's not gone away recently, actually, I lie, I've just come back from somewhere, skiing. That is ultimate hedonism, isn't it? You mentioned in your book.
Well, there's also some eudaimonia in skiing, because you are doing some kind of physical self-development. You're learning something. And then there's also a bit of what chapter 6 is about, which is about hardship, which is doing something difficult. And chapter 6 and chapter 3 both start with skiing, actually. And it's the fact that when you start skiing, it's absolutely shit, because you just fall over all the time. You're cold. You're wearing horrible plastic hard things on your feet. And you're strapping your feet into two planks of wood and then skiing on frozen water over rocks. I mean, it's a ridiculous idea.
Yeah, I loved how you described it in the book, exactly that. You go to a place where they often clear for avalanches, strapped to planks of wood, and just decide to throw yourself down there. All right, yeah.
It's obviously absurd, and yet somehow there's something within it that we like. So there are all these things and these absurdities about travel that I tried to explore in the book as well. Like, why would you get in a metal container for 16 hours to get somewhere and do something you can do 2 hours away, largely? Well, it isn't exactly the same, is it? The culture is different, the climate's different, the weather's different, the food is different. But also, I think in an era of being aware about the environmental impact of travel, the sociological impact of travel, the impact of building in fragile environments, we have to be more conscious about the choices we make in travel as well. So I think that's another reason that I wanted to explore that in the book.
I think it works really well, Ash. And the other thing is, it sort of makes you reflect on when you're not traveling, when you're at home. It's like, what about my life here is either lacking or I want to add to in some way? And what element is travel bringing to that? So, yeah, I think you're onto something with it. My favourite chapter was the last one, and it had me blubbing. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your last chapter?
So the reason I love travel is because of New Zealand. New Zealand and my mum. I fell in love with the concept of travelling when I went to New Zealand, and I went to New Zealand because of my mum. So mum had travelled there in the 1970s, and when I was a teenager, I was being raised by my mum, who was partly on income support in social housing. So we weren't wealthy, and travel wasn't really a big part of our lives at all. And I was at the local state school, which was going on a rugby tour to Australia, New Zealand, and the Cook Islands. And mum found out, and she said, you should go on this. And she got a second job as a cleaner. She was already working as a cleaner, and she got a second job to save for my ticket so that I could go on this. And she said, I think this will have a big impact on you. She loved New Zealand, and she said you should have opportunities like this to expand your horizons. And it changed my life.
Mm.
That experience of New Zealand, which is what I cover largely in chapter one, made me curious, opened up my curiosity, and that's why I travel. Mum and I had spoken about going traveling to New Zealand together, and we always really wanted to. And we didn't, because she passed away 3 years ago now. 2.5 years ago now, of ovarian cancer. And after that happened, I sort of felt okay for a while. And then basically for the best part of like a year, I was pretty depressed. I look back on that time and realize just what a state I was in. And a year after Mum passed away, almost a year to the day after Mum passed away, I think it's a difference about 4 days, Dre gave birth to Lyra, baby Lyra. And we had talked about going to New Zealand, Dre and I, together for a while. So we went to New Zealand, and Mum loved New Zealand. And I'd kind of gone there sort of as a way to just remind myself that life could be good and this place that I loved. And it was also a journey that meant a lot between Mum and I. So there's a exploration of traveling for grief in the book. Different types of grief travel, as it's known. Commemorative, family, sort of healing and looking after yourself. And I realized, actually, as I started to learn about these different types of travel after the trip to New Zealand, that Mum had done many of those herself. And I realized that my time in New Zealand did a lot of that as well. So it was commemorative. And yes, I was sad because I thought about Mum during that time there, but it was also a real journey that actually turned my grief into hope. And I think that is a very powerful aspect of travel. It can transmute difficult things into good things. And we can use it as a period of healing and reflection and space and time, and use it as an opportunity to reconfigure our feelings towards the world. And I was very conscious of Mum all the time because it was all places that she loved and she spoke about a lot. And there's a very special story about a necklace in the book, an Aotea necklace. And the connection between my mum and my daughter and this necklace and New Zealand.
And you're wearing it right now, aren't you, Ed?
I'm wearing it right now. I haven't taken it off since, actually.
Aww.
It's an Aotea necklace. And, you know, I don't miss Mum any less, but I think I'm less crippled by the grief because that journey helped that grief become hope that life could be good again.
Yeah, and I think the way you wrote that, Ash, it was just so moving. And it's what I loved about your book, actually, is that there's so much like personal anecdotes, but like intertwined with this deep thought that we all know you for, Ash. We all know and love you for your deep thinking. And it just, it worked really well. And then you got like, you know, interviews with people who've done incredible things as well. So yeah, it was genuinely one of my favourite books that I've read recently. You've nailed it.
Well, that's really good to hear because it's a blend of travelogue, memoir, interview, research, historical travels, and this sort of smart thinking approach. And I don't know about you. You did this a bit with the Esquibo book, the Amazon book. You use that as a real exploration of yourself and like your motivations to travel and how travel affects you and what was your purpose on going on this journey. And I think you want any book to give you something that you take away from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I find some travel books can often just be, I went here, I did this, I saw this. And maybe the first time you read one of those types of books, it can be quite moving or has a big impact. It can inspire you to go and travel. And you know, that's where a lot of my travel inspiration comes from. But for me now, I wanted this book, basically. I wanted someone to write this book. So I ended up writing Why We Travel.
And it's such a good one, Ash. And I kind of come back to what you just said about, you know, writing about journeys and things, because quite often, you know, when you go on holiday and people say, oh, how was it? Tell me about it. No one actually cares. And you can slowly see the eyes glazing, can't you? And for me, what was in mind when I was writing Life Lessons from the Amazon, it was like, well, what would I want someone to learn from this? Like, okay, I had this incredible adventure. It was 3 months in the Amazon, kayaking down a river that had never been kayaked from source to sea. Great for me. Like, what's in it for you? And I guess that's kind of, I think, where we kind of have our shared passion around travel, isn't it? It's like, what can we learn? How can we develop? Like, let's talk about this travel space and make it more than that kind of individual, egotistical journey, which often they can be, and that's okay too. But yeah, how do you kind of go beyond that in a sense?
You're right. It's absolutely fine to go and have an individual egotistical journey because you want to get to the top of a mountain, have a journey of healing, take your mum's ashes to New Zealand. if you're going to talk about those stories to other people, why, what value does it give them? And yeah, I think I presume it's the same for you, because it's what you did in Life of Lessons from the Amazon, is this idea of, if you work in this field and you're talking about travel, how are you helping other people travel better? I say better as in more fulfillingly. There isn't like a scale of this is good travel, this is bad. If you want to just go and lie on a beach in the south of Spain and drink beer, that is absolutely fine. I really enjoy that.
Hell yeah, throw in some olives, Ash, and I'm there.
Throw some olives, maybe a bit of ham.
Oh, yes.
Come on. So that's absolutely fine. And I think that's something else I really wanted to acknowledge in the book. Yes, like you, some of my travel has been physically, mentally, psychologically hard, and has had this kind of sort of, I don't know, this sort of, I'm doing this noble thing to reveal stories of Indigenous people, or you know, there's this sort of aspect of that with some of the travel that we've both done. I wanted to acknowledge that it is also absolutely fine and legitimate to just take a break and lie on a beach.
Yeah.
But that's only one part of travel. And for me, when I do a trip, I want to go and, if I'm going on a holiday, I'd like to go and lie on the beach. But I think it's also important to understand, can I find some curiosity here? Why are the buildings like this? Why is this the wine of the region? Why don't they sell wine here? Why do they only have beer? These different questions, I think, make travel interesting.
Definitely. And I'll never forget, Ash, I think in one of our podcasts, you said you had some rules for travel, which is like, go to like a sports ground, a place of worship. Oh God, I'm testing myself now. How much did I listen to Ash? But yeah, you basically had a few rules around like, when you go to a place, this is how you approach it. And I love that. It was that like curiosity of spirit that you have, that you bring to your work and bring to the podcast actually. But yeah, I think it is really relevant, and it's definitely shaped how, when I go places, or even, you know, not further afield than, you know, the next village. But yeah, it's kind of just asking those questions of where are we and what are we doing here? Which I ask myself regularly.
Yeah, so you've kind of got like the existential one, haven't you? Like, who am I? What am I doing? And I think the questions that you just mentioned, like chapter one's all about curiosity. So there's that, with each of the motivations, there's the, how do you use this motivation before you go on your trip? And how do you use it whilst you're traveling? So one is like a planning, and one planning to get the right trip lined up and develop an itinerary. And then the other one is the mindset once you're in a location. And those questions that you just pointed, or those sort of things to do, it's go to a site of religious worship in the place that you're going, go to a site of sport in the place that you're going, eat the cliche local food, drink the cliche local drink. It's just a bit of a hack to remind you about, what is this place and how is it different from home? What is it about this place that gives it its sense of place and identity? Because that's what makes you feel elsewhere, I think, when you travel.
Yeah, I completely agree. Bit of real talk, Ash. Well done. You've written a book. You had a baby. It's about to be birthed into the world. How are you feeling about it?
I feel nervous. And the reason is you don't actually know if it's any good. Like, it's lovely that you think it's good. Obviously, I think it's good enough to be published.
Yeah.
I'm not like terrified that it's awful. My wife, Dre, likes it. Lyra doesn't have a huge amount of literary criticism yet as a 16-month-old.
She can roar like a lion, though, I heard earlier. She does an amazing roar.
She can roar like a lion. So I hope it's okay. And I just really hope that everybody that reads it, I'd like them to take at least one thing away, where they go, okay, I can now approach travel a bit differently. That's what I hope. Is it going to be a classic? Is it going to be a reprinted book? I have no idea. I genuinely have no idea.
Oh, no, Ash, I definitely think, because I have not read anything like this around the travel industry. And I think, like you described it as smart thinking, I think that's exactly what this is. It's definitely made me consider motivations for a next trip, actually, kind of thinking, okay, like, how do I go on a trip purely about healing? Or if I was to take inspiration from someone on Instagram, like, what would it be and why, and where am I going? And it's, yeah, I guess it's got me thinking about travel in ways that I hadn't before. So in that regard, Ash, I think it's a win.
Well, that's really good. Should we practice? We could put one of these into application. I wonder. That's so
smart thinking travel calculator. I don't know what we call it. Funnel.
Smart thinking. I don't want to use the word algorithm because it sounds like I've created like an AI book.
I'm not sure I want to put something in a smart thinking funnel anyway, Ash.
It does sound a bit weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, something I found. So I said at the beginning of the episode that, you know, I just got back from skiing, but I went skiing with the family and it was so different. And that was a really interesting way of looking at travel because suddenly it wasn't so much about me skiing. It was about enabling Willow and getting Finn out on a sled. And again, it was a completely different feeling to how when I've travelled on my own, you know, maybe previously you just want to get a load of good runs in, you want to ski as much as possible. But this time it was like, no, I want to help someone learn. I want to be there and watch as Willow like clips herself into her skis and like swoops down the slopes for the first time. And it was magic. It was completely different. And yeah, you could be going to the same location year after year, and you've got a completely different motivation.
So that's interesting. And I think you've hit on something. There's two things there. One is like going to the same place repeatedly, but having very different experiences, or doing the same motivation, but in different places. Does that make sense? So I think about this. So I could go to a ski resort that I used to teach in. I used to work and ski instructor in a place called Verbier, which you know, Pitt. So if I went there just on my own, I would get in touch with one of my friends who's like an instructor for the British Association of Ski Instructors, and I'd like train with him all week so that I was a better skier. Whereas now, like I'd like Dre to feel more confident skiing down a red run, and I'd like to just see the joy and wonder on Lyra's face as she's like, wow, snow.
Yes. Or what is this cold, fluffy thing?
Yeah. And I think that kind of wonder and awe. So it's such a cliche, but seeing the world through the eyes of a child, what people really mean is having the cognitive mental state of wonder, which is the ability to look at the world, notice things, and allow yourself to then experience the emotion of awe, like, wow, that's amazing. And because everything's new to a kid, everything is awesome. But to us, we pass through the world and we lose that sense of awe because we're not in a state of wonder. Now, when we travel, we tend to switch on wonder and we notice things. We're like, oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. But to the people who live there, it's absolutely irrelevant. They're just like, oh, I see that all the time. So if you can try and bring that into daily life, that I think is a really powerful way to make, back to your question you were asking earlier, make travel improve your life every day. So it's using travel to change the way you feel back at home.
Yeah, and I don't know if you feel this, Ash, but something I definitely really get out of travel is how it almost slows down time for me. Because as you say, you're seeing so many new awesome things. It is that just sense of wonder that you maybe don't get when you're just walking to the shop to Tesco's and you're like, yeah, I've seen that. I know the shelves. And even just being in a different supermarket, like, and the layout and the challenge on the brain and all of those things, yeah, it sort of makes the days feel a little bit longer. And that kind of, yeah, change of time is something that I really appreciate when I travel.
That was a great example of what happens now that we're both parents, Pip, where it's like, you know, changing supermarkets. Imagine if you'd said that to yourself 5 years ago, six years ago.
Shoot me now. I was talking about making bread earlier. What's happened to us, Ash?
But you're absolutely right. Finding ways to notice things. In the book, in chapter 10, I talk about psychogeography, which is about the emotional interaction with the environment. In chapter 6, I talk about the way sort of a neurochemical blend can actually change the way you perceive time when you're in certain mindsets. But in chapter 10, it's about how you can pay attention differently. And you can use, people love to use like travel hacks. How do you hack this, hack that? And this isn't about using like Amex points to get a first class flight. This is the travel hack of hacking your mind to make your mind think differently about it. And one of the ones I love is trying to just notice specific colors as you're walking along a street. So just look out for red or just look out for blue. And if you just think that, you suddenly your mind is pulled up to, your eye line is pulled up to things you may not have noticed. You're no longer just looking at sort of 5'6", which is sort of like your sort of eye line level. You spot blue on like the second floor in a curtain or you spot blue on a sign for an advert that you'd walked past 100 times and never paid attention to, or you spot blue on the jacket of somebody driving a car past you, and suddenly your awareness of the world shifts and changes, and then you start to just go, oh, the road that I live on is quite interesting, or use a different sense. So since I've become a broadcaster and a podcaster, Pip, and having done things like the Dispatches for our travel podcast or Radio 4, I think about the soundscape in a place and the texture and feel of sound. And I start to think about how sound affects our entire experience of a place and also how it changes. So just get the recording app on your phone and just try and record different sounds as you're passing through a city. And you'll notice it sounds different by the river, or there's lots of traffic here, or I can hear birdsong here, or I can hear lots of different languages in this area. And you start to just become aware of these different textures of your city.
Yeah, and I love that. It's, for me, it's I've lived in Hong Kong and Malaysia, and it's traffic lights, you know, like a very distinctive sound. Or Japan has these beautifully musical traffic lights, and you're like, oh yeah, and you hear that. And it, you're right, those senses do take you somewhere. I'm going to steal your tip though, Ash, about colours. I've not done that. I think that's really cool. One of my sort of final questions for you, Ash, is like, if you want someone to take anything from your book, is there sort of like one key message that you can kind of summarise as like, yes, I'd really like you to take this from my book?
Think about why you travel before you decide where to travel. So much of our thinking is based on, where do I want to go next? But instead, say, why do I want to go next? What are you trying to achieve? Do you just want to lie on a beach and drink a beer? In which case, you might as well just go to Europe. Or even in the UK, you can achieve that in the UK. If you want to have guaranteed weather, just go to the south of Spain. Go on an all-inclusive holiday if that's what you want. Or if you have that, but then you're like, actually, I'd like to discover something a bit different. I'd like a sense of discovery. I'd like to go somewhere I've not been before. I'm a bit curious about another culture, or I might want to see something else. Then you might go to Albania. So the underlying thing is still there, but you've got a different motivation you want to pull in as well. But the key is, think about why you want to travel in the first place. Do you want to go and do something really difficult? Do you want to get a sense of achievement and motivation? And do you like hardship? Well, good. Figure that out first and then figure out where you can go to fulfill that. So there's that. Then the second bit is, how do you make the most of your travel when you're there? Asking curious questions, learning a bit about a place beforehand so you can have interesting conversations. Leave space in your diary for serendipity. So think about why you travel before, where you travel, and then think about how can you apply those motivations when you're actually traveling.
Yeah, and I love that chapter on serendipity, like that kind of almost just say yes to opportunities, like see what's around you and grab life with both hands almost, isn't it? And get out there and see the world.
But the other important thing about serendipity is, do not overplan, because if you overplan, you don't have the time and the space to say yes to opportunities.
And of all the things you wrote about in your book, Ash, which is the journey that most sticks out for you or has most impacted you as a person?
So each chapter starts with a journey that I've done through which I discover the motivation. And I think as I wrote the book, I realized that each of these journeys moved my life in a different direction in a way that I hadn't expected. So in chapter 8, which is about empathy, it was about how going to Estonia with the British Army as part of an operation called Op Kibrit, which was to deter Russian aggression and reassure our NATO allies. I discovered this whole story of Russian occupation that sent me on an 8,500-kilometre journey, ended up with me doing a master's in strategic communications and presenting BBC Radio 4 documentaries. That's a pretty big impact on my life, from one trip to Estonia, how it opened up all of that. But ultimately, it has to be that first one to New Zealand, because if I hadn't opened up that box of curiosity and tapped into that very powerful human instinct, encouraged by my mother, and seized that opportunistic moment, I wouldn't be doing anything of what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
I might still be in Windsor watching Star Trek. Not that there's anything wrong with Star Trek, of course.
And Ash, I must say, one of your chapters is titled Eroticism. And maybe we should just leave that there for our curious listeners, just to find out what the hell motivated Ash in terms of eroticism. And yeah, maybe have to read the book to find out, unless you want to elaborate, Ash.
Well, it's not sex tourism. Let's just say that it's more complex. It's interesting how many people mention that as the eroticism. Oh, tell me more. It's actually drawn from a theory by a woman called Esther Perel, who's a relationship psychotherapist.
She's so good, isn't she?
She's great. Oh, we should definitely try and interview her at some point this year.
That would be amazing.
Esther, if you're listening, come and talk about the erotic in travel.
Yes, I'm there for it. Ash, well, your book is out on the 11th of April.
It is, but if anybody would like to have the book, make sure you pre-order it because it makes such a difference to how well the book does long-term. So please pre-order it.
Definitely. And like, if you like it, please leave a review because those are the things that we authors live for, isn't it? Not the negative ones. They're the ones that we could do without. But when you get a nice bit of feedback or a nice review, it's just so heartwarming and it kind of makes all those early mornings and late nights sort of feel worth it. And I can honestly promise you that Ash's book is one of the best travel books I've read for a very long time. As you're probably aware, just listening to Ash, he's a very special human. So yeah, I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, thanks, Pip. And the point you made about reviews, actually, even just you telling me that you've enjoyed it, that is exactly what you hope from a book.
That 100 quid's coming back later, right, Ash?
That 100 quid coming back later, yeah. But you can get it from... So people ask me, where's the best place to get it from? For me, I don't mind where you order it from. Amazon is great because the more orders go through Amazon, the more people see it when they look on Amazon. But if you can, get it from a local bookshop because that puts money back into your local community. And they're the sort of lifeblood of our culture and identity and nation. Stanford's, the travel bookshop, they're great. Of course, Waterstones all on the high street, but if you can order from your local bookshop, please do.
Amazing. Well, we will be back shortly with more episodes and we are super stoked for what's coming up. And yeah, thanks for listening, guys.
And also, if you've got any questions about how to travel or why to travel, make sure you get in touch with Pip or I. I'm on @AshBardwaj on Instagram or Twitter.
And I'm on @PipStewart on Instagram and X, Ash. Stuck in the past, goddammit.
Thanks, Pip. And thank you for asking me about why we travel. I look forward to many more conversations on this theme.